1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on the biggest rock albums in history. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, Phil Collins, Mike Rutherford, and Tony Banks mark the anniversaries of two landmark Genesis releases.
What we used to do was actually a wonderful cop-out, because you do these long songs and it means you take a small piece of music, 1 or 2 minutes. If you're doing a long piece, you just play it for 1 or 2 minutes and then segue to something else. You haven't got to develop it into a song, which is actually much harder.
You're also going to lose fans because they like surreal sci-fi approach that we used to have. But as we change and the audience change, you know, you hope that you take people with you. Maybe we were never a progressive rock group.
And this is Tony Banks.
And this is Mike Rutherford, and we are Genesis. Welcome back to In the Studio
with Genesis. I'm Phil Collins with Redbeard.
Between 1980 and 1986, the British trio Genesis released a series of 4 hit albums, each more successful than its predecessor by as much as 5 times. And 2 of those Genesis albums, 1981's Abacab and 1986's Invisible Touch, are having significant 30th and 35th anniversaries, respectively. If you read the critical reviews of that period, many respected music writers imply that because Genesis singer-drummer Phil Collins had a parallel solo career take off during that time, that Genesis guitarist Mike Rutherford and keyboard player Tony Banks unwittingly, if not unwillingly, were led by Collins in a more mainstream pop direction. Phil Collins assures us that it was simply the popularity of the hit song Misunderstanding from Duke that lifted any self-imposed restrictions on exploring what the band Genesis could be.
And it was very unlike a Genesis song at the time, and that was our first big hit in the States. It brought us to a much wider audience. There was lots of youngsters in the audience for the first time, kids screaming, which was unheard of at a Genesis show. And of course that did well for album sales for us, having a hit single, and suddenly people knew of Genesis. A lot of people that had never heard of Genesis before suddenly knew of our existence, which was strange for us to think, because we'd been going around for 10, 12 years at that point.
Look at me, you never look at me. Ooh, I
Reply It All from the 1981 Abacab album by Genesis marked the first time that a real horn section had appeared on a Genesis song, but Phil Collins had utilized the Earth, Wind, and Fire brass on his Face Value solo album, which came out prior to Abacab.
We tried to get a horn section sound on Duke on Behind the Lines, on the Genesis version, and we didn't think of asking real horn players, so I had a duck call that I used like into a microphone, which triggered a vocoder, and we got a horn sound, right? And then on my album, I used the real guys, you know, the real Earth, Wind, and Fire guys. And when we were doing No Reply At All, it just sounded like it could have horns on it. And I said, why don't we get some horns? You know, we're changing everything else about what we do. Why don't we try that too? That would make people think Earth, Wind, and Fire horns with Genesis. I've got to listen to this. I've got to check this out. You know, and it was kind of taking people off automatic pilot. Whatever they thought of Genesis, we were trying to just shake them a bit and say, no, we're not quite what you think we are. We may be something different. Check it out.
Genesis guitar player Mike Rutherford told me that Abacab was a turning point, not just commercially, but creatively as well.
Probably Duke and Abacab, because you can link them together, are two very important albums for us, because we did a bit of a rethink, I think. And it started with Duke. At Duke, we started writing again as a band, which then led on to Abacab, which was a much easier album to make and was all about writing together. So I think those two albums is where we did a bit of a little shift. And Abacab was when we started to get back into that way of writing. The songs, really, Abacab, No Reply, and Keep It Dark and Lurker were the ones I felt that were the best on that album. And they're the ones that we wrote fairly spontaneously.
We'll be right back.
nonsensically named after the three musical sections, Section A, B, and C, the title song to the 1981 Genesis album Abacab was clearly nowhere near the pop mainstream, points out Genesis singer, drummer Phil Collins.
It's true. I mean, some fans, old songs to them are songs from Abacab, you know. And in fact, we have a much longer history. I mean, there's probably only... Well, in English band terms, anyway, I mean, obviously you've got people like Grateful Dead and probably bands like that have been around a long time, but really you've got the Stones and the Who and us, and their old songs are the songs that go back to the late 60s or mid-60s in the case of the Stones and the Who. But it depends on who you talk to. Yeah, I mean, I think older fans of ours tend to sort of to criticise or not enjoy or feel they shouldn't enjoy the shorter songs because those are the songs that have actually been in the charts and they feel like that maybe... we've sold out or commercialised what we do to get them there. And in fact, you know, we have had those kind of songs throughout the history of the band. I mean, I Know What I Like was one of the early hits we had in England. But I mean, all the way through the history of the band, there have been short songs, you know, and there have been long songs. So it depends who you talk to, who likes what, really.
Genesis' Abacab album was the first of several times that composer Phil Collins would address the issue of homeless people and society's reluctance to acknowledge them or to feel any responsibility for finding solutions. Up next, Genesis keyboard player Tony Banks joins Collins and Mike Rutherford. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Genesis for the anniversaries of Abacab and Invisible Touch.
And this is Tony Banks.
And this is Matt Rutherford, and we are Genesis.
Welcome back to In the Studio
with Genesis. I'm Phil Collins with Redbeard.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's the 5th anniversary of Genesis' blockbuster Invisible Touch album, their 13th studio album. But it was far from being an unlucky number for Genesis. All three members of Genesis found it creatively challenging, musically, to say effectively in 3 minutes what sometimes had taken them 23 minutes to say previously. Meanwhile, broadening the appeal of Genesis immensely. Phil Collins and Mike Rutherford reminded me of the best reason for change.
We were becoming a caricature of ourselves. And we hit the Abacab sessions, and we just thought, to hell with it. We threw all that stuff out and just worked on the stuff that felt a bit different. And I think it's that that makes Abacab a very important album.
We were running the risk of becoming predictable if we just carried on the same way. So we just decided to put some tripwires in front of each other. And so when we were writing, we went through lots of different changes. You know, we started using drum machines to write with, and improvising more, taking the Duke approach one stage further. But more importantly, probably stripping back the sound. Since we've had our own place, studio to write and record, I mean, with Abacab being the first album that we had our own studio, although we didn't write the songs in the studio at that point, because the studio was being built across the path, you know, when we went in there, we found that some sounds were quite, you know, it occupied certain space, like the drum sound at that point was quite big, and so it enabled us to sort of use a little bit less rather than sort of layering it upon layer upon layer. So at that point, our sound probably scaled down a bit. And as you mentioned, Man on the Corner, something like that, in the old days, probably we may have over-arranged a song like that. Whereas with, you know, in that period, we heard it and it sounded good, so we didn't screw around with it. I think we've all become a little bit more economical with our playing and over the years, and sort of doing whatever's best for the song. So that mixed with the way we write and record now, I think it probably adds up to something that if you hear it and it doesn't need any more stuff, you leave it.
Yeah.
title song, Invisible Touch, became Genesis' first number one U.S. single, one of five top five songs from the album, which went number one in the UK and number three in the U.S.
We never had a direction. We wrote songs, you know, and some of these songs were 10 minutes, some were 15, some were 20, some were 3. And if they sounded better, if an idea was right at 3 minutes, you know, 3 or 4 minutes long, you don't want to sort of milk it for everything it's worth. If an idea fitted in a 3 or 4 minute format, if you like, not that we thought of formats as such, but if it sounded better as a 3 or 4 minute song, then we would leave it like that. Other things like Supper's Ready, that you have ideas that don't necessarily have punchlines, and they drift into other moods, and then you have your 10 minute songs, 12 minute songs, whatever. We were trying to write singles for years. You know, we were putting Carpet Crawlers out, I Know What I Like, The Lamb Lies Down, which songs that we thought were singles, but nobody ever played them because A, we were unknown, and B, we were branded as an album group. But nowadays, our 3 or 4 minute songwriting ability has got better.
Shh.
song Land of Confusion, going to number 4 on the Billboard pop chart, says a lot more about the changing taste of the mainstream 30 years ago than it does about any purported musical agenda by the band Genesis. But one distinct change in Genesis songwriting that can indeed be directly attributed to Phil Collins is the appearance of lyrical themes about romance and personal relationships.
Mike and Tony have always had problems saying I love you in a word, in a lyric. And I've never had a problem doing that. It's part of me. I'm very honest and direct. And the other guys, because of their upbringing, because of the kind of school they went to, and because of the fam, this is a purely honest, critical look at them. They've had trouble dealing with showing their emotions. I think there were a ton of, it was drummed into you at the school they went into that men didn't do this. You know, they were being bred for office and gentleman material. And I came from a totally different background, so I am a different kind of person. But Tony and Mike have loosened up incredibly.
By the time the 1983 self-titled Genesis album came out, each band member had released no less than 2 solo albums. And then Phil Collins' third 1985's No Jacket Required made Phil a superstar in his own right. Instead of siphoning off creativity and diluting Genesis of strong material, the respective solo albums apparently inspired the group to lift any self-imposed restrictions to the Genesis sound. Tony Banks, joined by Collins and Mike Rutherford, says it was understood within the band that the solo albums were not a threat.
I don't think we thought it'd be one-off. I think because once you know that once you've started that kind of thing, you've had there's something about doing an album on your own that does give you a lot of pleasure, I think, which is sort of different kind of thing. You work with other people. You have a chance to carry ideas right the way through. And I think once you've done it once, it's like sort of an addiction. You'll want to do it again, regardless of how well they do or otherwise. And so once I think all 3 of us had done a solo record, then I think from then on, and we'd proved that it worked. Because obviously once, Phil's first record was so successful that he couldn't have done much better. And then the next Genesis album happened, and that still was working. So we kind of proved to ourselves that you could take the time away from the group and still have, still keep it working.
Guitarist Mike Rutherford of Genesis.
I think the thing to remember is that we've been thinking about doing solo albums for quite a while. It wasn't something that automatically, just because Phil had these problems and there was a time break, these problems, his little little quirks.
Which don't seem to go away either.
That's right. It had been on the cards for a while, and so it was just a natural time to do it. I think the thing to remember is that with groups it's kind of difficult. You can't start doing solo things and giving the group a rest for like a year or 2 or 3 or whatever until you reach a certain level of success. I guess someone like Steve Hackett kind of left before we got to that stage. There's a certain moment in time when the time is right and okay to do it, and it's not right before that time.
Need I say I love you? Need I say I care? Need I say that emotion's something we don't share? I don't want to be sitting here trying to deceive you, 'cause you know I know, baby, that I don't wanna go. We cannot live together, we cannot live apart. And that's the situation, I knew it from the start. Every time that I look at you, well, I can see the future. 'Cause you know I know, baby, that I don't wanna go. So we need all the way.
guitarist Mike Rutherford of Genesis, who returns in a moment with Phil Collins and Tony Banks to explain why Genesis takes the garden party philosophy of you can't please everyone, so you might as well please yourself. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Genesis Invisible Touch.
And this is Tony Banks.
And this is Mike Rutherford, and we are Genesis. Welcome back to In the Studio
with Genesis. I'm Phil Collins with Redbeard.
Talking with founding member, guitarist-songwriter Mike Rutherford, I quoted a passage from his memoir book, The Living Years. I've always thought that half of the point of being in a band is that the guys you're playing with are different to you, end quote. How so?
Well, that's really what being in a band is about, is what co-writing is about. You know, you don't want to play with someone else who's like you, because that's just, you do what you do. So in a way, I think co-writing, and, you know, I've always been a natural fit for a band member, because you gain something with other people, which you can't do on your own.
Another quote. Songwriting was and is still the area in which I measure success. Why is that so important to you, and what metric do you use to measure that success?
Well, I think, as I said in the book, it's really, that's really what gets me going. You know, that's what excites me. It's why I'm in the business. It's why I do music. The songwriting is really the key. I love playing live. That's great, but it comes after recording. And, you know, the world is full of wonderful instrumental players. And I'm really a guy who writes songs and then plays the guitar part for that song. And I judge it really by, it's actually how much it moves me. You know, when you're a songwriter or a musician, you've got to be selfish. You can't worry about the audience, not being unfair. Otherwise, you start trying to do what they want to hear. If something excites me and moves me, then I've achieved the right thing.
Genesis singer, songwriter, drummer Phil Collins.
We haven't concentrated on singles or anything. We just still write music. I mean, Tony Banks is still very uninterested in making hit records. And I don't set out to make a hit record. I just set out to write a song.
It's alright.
Genesis guitarist Mike Rutherford with me in the studio.
I think that it was actually a kind of a fallacy, because to be honest, I used to think that it was harder to write long pieces than to write shorter songs. And in fact, I realize now over the years that it's the opposite. It's actually long pieces in many ways are quite easy, because you haven't got to take a piece of music and develop it and make it into a song when they won't go sometimes. I mean, there's a definite art in taking one idea, one section of music, and developing it and making it a song. A freedom you have with a long piece, you can just do a bit of music that lasts 30 seconds, a minute and a half, 2 minutes, just do it once, state it, and move on. So in a way, it's actually quite easy to go over, in the sense, I think, that the extremes with the longer pieces and the shorter songs. And to be honest, I think people often imagine, different kind of fans imagine, that we prefer one area to the other, and it's not true.
thoroughly confounding the critics and effectively silencing any silly debate of pop versus rock, Tonight, Tonight, Tonight from Invisible Touch by Genesis runs almost 9 minutes long and peaked at number 3 on the Billboard Singles Chart. Figure that out. To date, Invisible Touch has sold more than 16 million copies worldwide, while Genesis is one of the only progressive rock bands to get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame so far. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio thanking my guests, Tony Banks, Mike Rutherford, and Phil Collins. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2016, all rights reserved, transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online 24/7 at inthestudio.net.